It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. Mark Levonier with you for this hour of crime. Later on, a story called The Gentle Way on The Whistler. But right now, a true story of crime on Suspense. Broadcast on August 27th, 1951 on CBS. It's the story, Report on the Jolly Death Riders.
You are about to hear a story based on actual events to protect the innocent. Names and places have been changed. Autolite and its 96,000 dealers bring you Mr. William Holden in a story taken from life. Tonight's presentation of Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents Report on the Jolly Death Riders, a story about the tragic misuse of hot rod automobiles, starring Mr. William Holden. Now, with Report on the Jolly Death Riders and the performance of Mr. William Holden, Autolite hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
Hi, Herb.
Oh, hi, Cap.
Hey, you look tired.
I look tired, and I got a right to look tired.
Wrap it up.
Ask me sometime when I'm not so beat. I hate them like this.
We all do.
Just kids, Cap. Just a bunch of punk kids that should have had more sense.
They need a good lesson.
Well, they've had a good one. Look, I'll be in the other office making out my report in case anybody wants me.
I'll relay the information.
Thanks. Let's see now. Accident report. Murder. Yeah, that'd be a better word for it. From Lieutenant Harbor, San Francisco Police Department, 2 Traffic Division, August 27th, 1951. Report on the Jolly High Riders. Jolly Death Riders might be more appropriate. At approximately 8:35 p.m., August 22nd, Mr. and Mrs. Warren Milford of 3589 Glendon Drive, Berkeley, California, were driving in their 1949 sedan along the Bay Flats, approaching the ramp into the Oakland Bay Bridge. Brackets. Special note. August 22nd was the 10th anniversary of the Milfords. Warren Milford had arranged for a surprise party at his sister-in-law's home in the Marina District. End brackets. As the Milfords passed through the tunnel on the Yerba Buena Island and approached the bay half of the bridge, traffic at that time of evening was extremely light.
I think we should have telephoned them, Warren.
Why?
They might not be home.
Well, I'm enjoying the ride anyway. Night, night?
Yes, it is. No fog.
Clear as a bell.
Listen, Warren, I don't want you and that brother of yours to get started on that baseball. That's all the two of you ever talk
about. Gladys, what are you talking about?
Well, from the minute we get together, it's baseball. Seals here, seals there. You think that that's all there was in the...
Hey, look at those two cars coming this way.
You're going awfully fast.
Well, they must be crazy. They're racing.
Warren, they're right in the middle of the bridge.
Ooh.
Those hot rods piled up with a bunch of youngsters. Warren, they're not moving over.
Hey, you darn fool, get over!
In order to avoid a head-on collision with one of the hot rods, Warren Milford swerved his car to the right, but he lost control and crashed into one of the steel beam supports of the bridge. Neither one of the rod-hod cars involved stopped, and not one of the other passing motorists who stopped to render assistance was able to give any specific information to the officers at the scene of the accident. In view of that fact, no general alarm was spread. Results of the accident. Warren Milford was thrown clear of the crash. He miraculously only suffered cuts and bruises. His wife, Gladys, died of internal injuries in the ambulance. Warren Milford was informed of his wife's death at the receiving hospital.
Our 10th wedding anniversary. She didn't know a thing. I'm so sorry.
Mr. Milford, I'd like you to try to answer just a few questions for me.
Thing. She probably thought I hadn't remembered, but I did.
I know it's hard for you, Mr. Milford. I know it's awfully hard, but you think you'd be able to identify either one of the cars?
Cars? Oh, kids. They were just kids.
Kids?
Yeah, up for a joyride.
Could you identify any one of them if you saw them again?
No, I didn't see any faces. They weren't all boys, though. Some girls, I think. Just a bunch of jolly high riders.
And what about the cars, Mr. Milford? What kind were they?
Well, you've seen them. All over town, all the young high school kids have them. They're hot rods.
Hot rods? Yeah. Could you identify just one of them?
Jolly high riders. Tooker.
What was that?
It was in white letters on a gold background. Just for a second, I saw it.
What did you see?
The jolly high riders. Painted on the side of one of the cars. They took her.
The jolly high riders?
Yes, it was white letters on a gold background.
All right, Mr. Milford. You can rest now. Sergeant?
Kids. Just young kids. We're out for a joyride.
The following morning, I assigned Detective Sergeant Boyle to locate the whereabouts of the hot rod club known as the Jolly High Riders. It was a simple matter. They were listed in one of the national hot rod magazines. The address turned out to be a cheap gymnasium located up on West Stockton. The gym was up one flight of stairs.
You look inquisitive. You want something?
Yeah. The Jolly High Riders. I understand they meet here.
Maybe they do.
Who's in charge?
You want a lot of information for
you.
Uh-oh. Gendarme, huh? I should have smelled you.
Where's the club meet, mister?
I manage the gym, gendarme. I'm the head boy. The Jolly High Riders use the back room over there. You see the sign? The Jolly High Riders. The club meeting room. No harm, is it?
No harm.
They got 5 charter members. 5 in the whole club.
Just 5?
Yeah. Just 5, gendarme.
That's a big word with you.
Real big. I learned it young.
I bet you did. Who are the charter members, head boy?
What's this all about? It's a legitimate club.
I want names.
Me, Larch Brisson. That's a name for you.
Who else besides you, Larch?
Oh, it's Mickey. Mickey Holter from a parking garage. His girlfriend, Julie. And Wanda Lake. A sweet girl. Sweet to me all the time. And Wally. Fat Bergman, we call him. Wally, the fat boy. He's over there. Hey, look at him, skip rope. He wants to lose weight. What a laugh, huh, gendarme? Look at him.
Don't die laughing. Come on.
Take it easy, you.
Bergman?
Yeah?
Oh. A gendarme, Wally. A great, big gendarme.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's nice. I'm glad to know you, sir. Yes, sir.
Wally, do you any of you boys own a hot rod?
Hot rod?
Yeah, somebody owns a hot rod, gendarme.
Who?
The whole club owns a car. What do you think of that?
Wally, where were you last night about 8:30?
Last night? Last night? Where was I last night? I got such a bad memory.
You went to a meeting in that room, Wally. You went to a meeting at the club.
Oh, yeah, that's right, sir. We had a meeting.
We discussed how come somebody stole our club car. What joker stole our car with the name on the side, the Jolly High Riders? And right before the big race on Saturday, how come?
Larch Brisson was a hard boy. He managed the cheap gymnasium and lived in one of its back rooms. Walter Bergman, just out of school, lived with his family. It was Bergman who later volunteered the address of Wanda Lake and of the garage where Mickey Holzer worked. The garage supervisor told me that Mickey was downstairs working in the mechanic shop. He was working on the frame of a car. It was a familiar frame. Mickey?
I spotted you, mister. What do you want?
Lieutenant Harbor, San Francisco Police Department. Getting ready for the race?
Maybe, maybe not.
What are those things you're working on?
I'm putting on single acting shocks. Against the law?
No. This your car, Mickey?
Part of it. When it's finished.
Oh, that's right. You and your girlfriend, Julie, are charter members of the Jolly High Riders.
So?
Well, this must be the club car.
The new one.
Oh? What happened to the old one?
Somebody stole it. Yesterday afternoon, somebody glommed it. Can you imagine?
Why didn't you report the theft to the police?
No, because, you know, we thought maybe one of the other rod clubs had made a big joke on it. Right before the big race coming up Saturday.
Last night, Mickey, your old hot rod car caused a big accident on the Oakland Bay Bridge.
Oh, it's awful. It's terrible.
The driver's in the hospital.
I'm sorry.
His wife's in the city morgue. What's the matter, Mickey?
Nothing. I just hate talk like that. I hate talk about killing. Is it wrong to hate talk like that?
After having spoken with the three male members of the High Riders, I knew I had a tough one on my hands. All three boys were lying. It was obvious. Wanda Lake was home when I rang the doorbell of her apartment on Kearney. I took one look at her and understood why she was sweet. Police Lieutenant Harbor, Miss Lake. May I talk to you for a few minutes?
Uh-huh. Don't mind my curlers, huh? Want some curl for tonight. I was just practicing to dance with Jim. Come on in.
Thank you.
I'd offer you a drink, only I can't keep her in the house with Hazel around.
Hazel?
Yeah. She's my oldest sister. She takes care of me ever since my folks died. That's a laugh, huh? Taking care of me.
How old are you, Wanda?
17. Ripe old age?
Yeah.
What are we going to talk about, Lieutenant?
Oh, about the Jolly High Riders?
Hey, I'm a charter member. Well, you know.
Yeah, that's fine. I understand your club car was stolen yesterday afternoon.
Yeah. Ain't it dreadful?
Uh-huh. And it caused a big accident last night, Wanda.
You mean our hot rod?
That's right.
Hey, how dreadful.
Where were you last night?
To a meeting of our club at the gym. We talked all about our dance tonight.
Did you talk about anything else?
Well, he sure did. We talked all about our club car being stolen right before the big race. Somebody stole it right off the street. Wasn't that just dreadful, Lieutenant?
Yeah, Wanda. Just dreadful. The High Riders had built a solid alibi. Whichever one of them had masterminded it had done it with careful planning. We had no lead on the other hot rod involved, so I had to follow through with what I had. I had one member yet to talk to, Mickey's girlfriend, Julie. I made plans to see her the next morning, but a break in the case came sooner than I expected. It was late that same night. I was in the office going over some reports when the call came in. Lieutenant Harbor speaking.
This is Wally Bergman, the fat boy lieutenant. You know Wally?
Yeah, Wally.
Listen, I'm so mad. Everybody's gone. Going to meet again in an hour for another race.
Where, Wally?
The bridge. Oh, show them. Meet me at the traffic island, Mr. Harbor.
I'll be there.
So mad. They think they're so smart.
Straight away onto the bridge was practically deserted when we got there. As we drew up to the curb of the traffic island, I saw that something was wrong. Lying doubled up on the grass was Wally Bergman. He had bruises and cuts all over his face and was bleeding at the mouth. And standing next to him, hands outstretched, was Mickey Holtz. Another meeting, Mickey?
Huh? Look, somebody called me. I came to meet somebody.
Save it, Mickey, save it. Tell it to somebody who'll believe you. All right, Cap, put the cuffs on him. Mickey Holzer was held for assault and battery. After Bergman had been treated at the clinic, I questioned him. I got no quarters. And I knew that I'd get none from Mickey either. But nevertheless, I had him brought into my office. Mickey, you're in a bad way.
It looks like it, doesn't it?
A charge of assault and battery can be a bad thing.
You gotta prove it.
Mickey, tell me who was driving the car.
You're so smart, figure it out for yourself.
No, I'm not so smart. Just trying to see that things are done right. It's the job of any police officer. I wonder if Julie will tell me, Mickey.
Ask her. Go ahead, ask her.
What about your mother?
You try everything, don't you, copper?
You're bitter, Mickey.
All right, bitter. Is that against the law, too?
I'm holding you for 48 hours, and I'm going to find that car. Go ahead. Be bitter for all 48 hours. It seems that every cop, over a long period of time, develops a sense of intuition. I was like any cop. And my intuition told me that Mixie Holster was not the real assaulter of Wally Bergman. The following morning, I had a visitor. She was a small, graying old woman. I told her the whole story.
Not Mickey, Mr. Policeman. Oh, no, not him. He wouldn't even hurt a little thing.
Tell me, has Mickey ever gotten into any trouble before?
Oh, no. His papa died when he was only 9 years old. Mickey promised his papa he would never lie to me.
Mrs. Holzer, all I want to know is the name of the person who was driving the car that Mickey was in. If I know that person, I'll know who beat up Wally Bergman. But Mickey refuses to tell me.
Oh, maybe I will talk to Mickey. Maybe he won't lie to me.
All right, we'll try it. Sergeant, bring in Mickey Holzer. As soon as you bring him in, I'll leave you two alone.
I have faith in my son, all the faith in the whole world. He promised his papa, he wouldn't go back on his word. Mickey is not that kind of a boy.
I believe you, Mrs. Holzer.
All right, inside, kid.
Ma, what are you doing here?
Oh, my son. Oh, my son.
All right, I'll wait outside.
What are you doing here? Why'd you come?
I came because I have to help you, Mickey. Well,
go home. Go home. This is no place for you.
Mama should be by her son when he's in trouble.
Who called you?
Nobody called me. I came because I want to help you.
Nobody can help me. Leave me alone. You got no business here.
Well, I got a lot of business. Mickey, the policeman told me you are in a lot of trouble. He told me that if you would only tell him the name of the boy who was driving the car, he said if you told him that, Mickey, there would be no more trouble.
There'd be lots of trouble.
Mickey, if you won't for your mama, maybe you will for Papa. Papa loves you, Mickey.
Mark, leave.
Papa, for Papa, Mickey, for him.
Mark, get out.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Holzer.
Not even for his papa.
I knew my break had to come from within the members of the guilty club. And Julie, Mickey's girlfriend, was my last chance for that break. She worked in a dime store on Mission Street. On her lunch hour, I asked her to walk over to the park with me. We sat down on one of the benches. I know that somebody in the club has told you not to talk, Julie. Who told you? Mickey?
Please.
All right, all right. Can you tell me who started the high riders, Julie? Well, sure, you can tell me that.
Mickey went to the gym to work out. He got to know the fellas. They all talked. The club got started that way.
Uh-huh. Who bought the hot rod?
They all pitched in. A few dollars from everybody.
Where's the car, Julie?
We all told you it was stolen.
Yes, yes, I know you told me. But it's a lie. You're all lying for no good reason. It isn't so much what's been done, Julie. A terrible thing, yes, but we want to see that it doesn't happen again. Can you understand that? Was Mickey driving, Julie?
No, I mean...
What do you mean, Julie?
I told you what you wanted to know.
Someday when you're older, Julie, you'll understand how important this is. I know you will. You're not a bad girl, but it's up to me right now to make you understand. Young as you are.
Please, I don't want to talk about
it. It's because you're afraid.
Please, Mr. Harper.
Julie, someday you and Mickey will be man and wife. Marriage is the happiness of two people. A long time ago, this man, Warren Milford, and his wife were just like you and Mickey.
Mr. Harper.
They made the same plans, they thought the same thoughts, and in each other's arms, they felt the same feelings. And there was then no difference than there is now between you and Mickey.
Mr. Harper,
you've taken a silly pledge dictated by a person who in the cool of evening strikes down another person in death and thinks nothing about it. Do you know what a person like this is called, Julie? Do you know?
I'm afraid.
A murderer, Julie, a murderer. And if you and I let them go, it can happen again. What they did was wrong, and we don't want it to happen again. Tell me, Julie, tell me. Help Mickey.
It was Wanda. She was driving it. It was a race with the flying fleeters from Oakland. On the bridge, Wanda wanted to drive, and Lark said it was all right.
And the hot rod, where is it?
I don't know, I don't know. When we got back to the club, Lark said not to worry. He made up the story. He told us not to worry about the car.
All right, Julie. It's all right. The case of the Jolly High Riders was broken. I needed one last item, the car in question. I pored over every last bit of testimony by the kids. And then it hit me. The big race on Saturday. It was a hunch, and I played it. A local paper gave me the location of where the speed test trials were being held. A long, sandy stretch of beach on the west end near the peninsula. The trials were already in progress when I got there. The two of them weren't hard to spot. They were racing in a low, cut-down blue car. The frame had looked familiar as it whizzed by me. I recognized the single shocks that Mickey had been working on.
Hey, come to the races, huh, gendarme?
Hi.
Nice looking rod, Larch.
Hey, the latest. 46 block, member mounting for the master cylinder, floor shift transmission. Great for drag.
And single acting shocks.
Right.
Nice paint job. When are you going to put your club name on the side?
Soon. Right now.
Oh, sure you will. Right about here, Larch?
Hey, don't scratch that paint job with a knife.
Gold, underneath the blue. And I bet if I scratch the rest of it off...
You copper!
Letters J-O...
You got no right to cut me.
I played a hunch, Larch.
Yeah, you're crazy.
My hunch was that you boys couldn't resist this race.
Lousy, lousy when a guy can't live his own life.
I'm arresting you for assault and battery, Larch. And Wanda, you for manslaughter.
Larch, we can't race.
Yeah.
That's right, Wanda, you can't race. And it may be a long time before you race again. I later found out Wally Bergman's reason for wanting to volunteer information. The boy had a crush on Wanda. She encouraged him and then laughed him off. Wanda Lake, not yet 18, will be turned over to juvenile authorities. Larch Brisson, just 21 and facing a charge of assault and battery, may have some time to think over his mistake. Actually, the only mistake he made was in trying to cover up the accident. Hot rods are not really bad things. They're not wrong. In fact, in some respects, they're healthy. For kids to take them apart and put them back together again, to see how fast they can make them run, it gives them a direction in which to toss a lot of extra energy. But there's that one important thing. Hot rods should be driven in places like that stretch of beach on the peninsula. Places set aside for them, like Muroc and the Bonneville Salt Flats in Utah. Not on the highways. End of report.
Suspense. Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. William Holden.
Autolite has again started its new suspense season with a story which demonstrates the tragic results of careless driving. And now here is a man who, as president of the National Safety Council, is vitally concerned with highway safety, Mr. Ned Dearborn.
Thank you, Mr. Wilcox. It is especially significant that Autolite chose to present report on the Jolly Death Riders this evening, because in a few days the Labor Day weekend will start with its tragic toll of needless highway accidents. Through stories like this, along with continued efforts of outstanding companies like the Electric Autolite Company, we are making some headway in the fight against thoughtless driving. In recognition of vigorous and continued efforts of Autolite in helping to improve highway safety, it is my great pleasure as president of the National Safety Council to present for the third consecutive year the Council's Public Interest Award for Exceptional Service to Safety to Mr. Royce G. Martin, chairman of the board and president of the Electric Autolite Company.
Thank you, Mr.
Next week on Suspense, our star will be Mr. Jeff Chandler in another story based on actual events and concerning one of the most fantastic prison breaks ever engineered. A dramatic report we call The Steel River Prison Break. In weeks to come, we shall present Miss Agnes Moorhead, Mr. Charles Lawton, and the popular young favorite, Mr. Tony Curtis, all on Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Marwick and conducted by Lud Gluskin.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 27th, 1951 on CBS. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. And now Willard Waterman stars in this next broadcast of The Whistler. He was best known on radio for taking over for the departing Harold Perry on the Great Gildersleeve series in 1950, following in the footsteps of a very popular radio character with a similar voice for several years. But it wasn't as if he wasn't a seasoned radio actor, especially with episodes of The Whistler. In the same year of this next broadcast, he co-starred or led in four episodes of the show. This June 23, 1947 broadcast from CBS called The Gentle Way.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. But first, an important announcement. There will be no Whistler next Monday. The next Whistler will come to you a week from Wednesday, July 2nd, and every Wednesday thereafter. Same hour, same station. Only the day will change. Remember, instead of Monday, the Whistler will come to you on Wednesdays hereafter. And now the Whistler's strange story. The Gentle Way.
The clock on the white wall showed 11:45, a half hour since Bruce Reimer had arrived in response to the summons. He was nervous now, unable to concentrate any longer on the scientific journals on the table beside his chair. It wasn't like Dr. Fenshaw to keep him waiting this way. And something in the man's voice had told him there was important news, that for the first time in the 11 years since Bruce Reimer had come to the Barker Institute of Biological Research, he was about to get a break, and it had been a long time coming. Yes, Reimer was a patient man, but there were moments during those 11 years when it looked like the breaks would never come, when he was forced to stand on the sidelines, smile politely, and congratulate the new, younger man who came and worked and picked the fat promotion. But he felt now that it had come, that now, at long last, Dr. Fenshaw, chairman of the board, had decided it was Reimer's turn.
Would you come in, Reimer?
Yes, of course, Dr. Fenshaw.
Sorry to have kept you waiting, Reimer.
Not at all.
Let's see now. You're still working on tobacco mosaic, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
How's it coming?
Well, we seem to be making some progress.
Good. Jules Emery working with you?
No, not at the moment. He started out with us in the field, but he's on a research problem of his own now.
Oh? What's that?
Well, I'm not sure exactly. I do know he was tremendously excited by Holzer's paper on toxins. Wanted to do some advanced work on Holzer's premise.
Emery's a brilliant research man. Pretty unstable, though. Inclined to go off half-cocked. Sit down, Reimer.
Oh, thanks.
Now, I... Presume you know Richardson has resigned as administrator.
Yes, I read about it in the papers.
Sick man. Job took too much out of him. We are faced now with finding a replacement.
Yes, sir?
We've always been pleased with your work, Reimer.
Well, that's very gratifying.
I've just spoken to Cardigan about you.
Cardigan? Why, he's in New York with the Manhattan Foundation.
Of course. He recommended you very highly.
Well, what is Cardigan to do with...
He's returning to us as the new administrator, Reimer. You will be his assistant.
His... Oh.
It's not official yet, of course, but I thought you'd be pleased to know.
Yes. Yes, naturally, I'm pleased, Dr. Fenshaw. Very pleased.
So it's happened again, Reimer. And of all people, it had to be Cardigan, who twice now has moved past you into executive positions you wanted and deserved. Cardigan the charmer, the diplomat, the fair-haired boy. Yes, Reimer, of all of them, it had to be Cardigan. The hatred for Cardigan was there from the moment you met him 10 years ago, Reimer. You sensed from the beginning that he had more poise, more talent, more integrity than you. That he was a better man for any job, and you hated him for it. Yes, and it's during those next few days, at a point you can't even place, that the hatred wells itself into something more concrete. Into a decision to kill Cardigan with an unusual murder instrument, in a clean, efficient way which could leave no trace. And the weapon you've chosen, Bruce, is a man. A highly temperamental human being named Jules Emery.
Busy, Jules?
Oh, Bruce, come here a minute. Take a look in the microscope here.
Oh, what's this?
A culture. Recognize it?
No.
Bacillus botulinus. 24 hours ago, it was something else. This fluid in the test tube here.
I see. But what are you...
Don't you see, Reimer? It's exactly what Holzer tried to prove. This toxin is simply a stage in the life cycle of the bacillus.
Well, you're certain of this?
As certain as I'm standing here. I tell you, Bruce, this is going to change the whole concept of toxins.
You told Cardigan about it?
I will in a week or two. As soon as I can have my notes typed up.
I wouldn't if I were you.
Why do you say that?
Oh, I don't know. You and Cliff Cardigan, pretty good friends?
Well, not especially. Why?
Well, somehow I had the impression you'd known him for a long time, long before you came to the Institute.
Well, he used to go with my wife before we were married.
Oh, that explains it.
Explains what?
And what he told the board of directors when... Oh. That's silly. Anyhow, congratulations on this, Jules. Well, I'd better be...
Wait a minute. What did Cardigan tell the board?
Let's forget it.
Oh, Jules. Bruce, will you stop talking in riddles? What are you getting at?
Well, it's only a rumor, but do you remember when Cardigan left a year ago to go to Manhattan Foundation and you were up for administrator here?
I was up for administrator?
Well, I thought you knew.
No.
Huh. Anyway, you'd have had it if Cardigan hadn't pulled for Richardson. At least that's what I've heard.
You mean he stopped me from getting it?
Oh, don't say it's true, Jules.
And Richardson was an outsider, a stranger.
That's why I say it's probably only a rumor. After all, Cardigan's a friend of yours. Or, anyway, a close friend of your wife.
Well, I was never told I was even being considered.
Well, of course, you knew it this time, didn't you?
No.
Well, that's funny. Well, I heard you were to be administrator and I was to be your assistant. And then Cliff Cardigan came back to town...
Deliberately to take the appointment from me, is that
it? Now, take it easy, Jules. That had nothing to do with it. Cardigan simply told me he was lonesome in New York, so he came back. It seems he had a friend here. Some young lady. Oh, but I talk too much. See you at lunch, Jules.
Bruce?
Yes?
You don't think that... Oh, nothing. Forget it.
All right. And Jules, you forget it too, will you?
It was like planting a seed, wasn't it, Bruce? The casual remarks you dropped to Jules Emery. And you could sense as you talked to him that the seed had dropped in fertile ground. That the doubts you left in his mind would soon be suspicions. That with the right care, the seed would strike root and grow into a raging hate for Cliff Cardigan that could transform Jules Emery into a murder weapon. And the beauty of it all, Bruce, is that you've taken the gentle way. And in the eyes of the law, you're an innocent bystander. It's only a few days after Cardigan takes over his post as administrator that you see an opportunity for move number two.
Cardigan, what's this about Fairfield? You were saying...
Just a second. There, may I have a cigar?
Oh, thanks.
All right.
Got it.
Well, there we are. Bruce, it seems the fruit growers around Fairfield are pretty hard hit with scale this year. Thought I'd send someone down there to make a survey. What do you think about lions?
Well, how long will it take?
Oh, a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks. Well, lions is okay. But I'd suggest Jules Emery. Poor guy could stand a little fresh air. Been shut up in his laboratory for weeks working on that toxin theory of his.
Toxin?
Botulinus. Seems to have hit something important. Do him good to get away for a while.
Well, if you think so. Tell him he leaves at the end of the week.
Well, it'd be better if you'd tell him. He's been here a long time, you know. I think he rather resents taking orders from me.
Well, that's odd.
I tell you what. I'm giving a little dinner at my apartment tomorrow evening. Why don't you come along? Both Jules Emery and his wife are coming.
Well, fine, Bruce. I'll be happy to come. Be nice to see Grace again. She and I went to high school together, you know. We'll have a lot to talk about.
Yes. Yes, I imagine you will.
And then remember me trying to tell your folks the car really did run out of gas on the way home from the country club dance?
They never did believe that.
And I don't believe it either. Here, you better have another cocktail.
Oh, no thanks, Bruce. I haven't finished this one.
She can't talk and drink at the same time like I do. Thanks.
Jules?
Huh? No thanks, Bruce.
Jules is thinking about his work again. Come on now, relax,
forget
darling.
Forget your botulinus toxin for once, Jules. Well, Grace, here's to the dear dead days beyond recall.
Excuse me. Was that the phone?
Oh, I didn't hear anything.
Well, I'd better check. Help yourself if you get thirsty.
Well, what happened in New York, Cliff?
Oh, wonderful city. Had an interesting job, nice salary, met some important people, but...
But what?
Oh, I guess my heart belongs right here.
Ever going back?
No, too lonesome. Mind if I smoke, Grace?
Of course not.
Have a cigar, Jules?
I don't smoke cigars.
Nonsense. Go ahead, try one.
I don't want to encourage a habit I can't afford, Cardigan. You see, I don't have a nice salary. I'm not a big shot who runs around with millionaires.
Why, Jules!
Well, say, Cliff, is Dr. Fenshaw a personal secretary named Edith Evans?
I believe so. Why?
Well, that's funny. She says Fenshaw wants to see Jules and me at his home right away.
Well, this time of night?
Don't look at me. I don't get it either. Well, come on, Jules. Let's go.
Yes?
Dr. Fenshaw is expecting us.
But
I'm Mr. Reimer, and this is Mr. Emery.
But I'm very sorry, sir. But Dr. Fenshaw's not at home. He and Mrs. Fenshaw are out to dinner.
See here, Bruce. What is this?
Wait a minute. His secretary just called me. Miss Evans.
Oh, there must be some mistake, sir. His personal secretary is a man. Roger Evans.
I see. Well, thank you very much. Good night.
Oh, good night, sir. I'll tell the doctor.
Oh, no, never mind. I'll see him in the morning. Come on, Jules. Well, maybe this is somebody's idea of a joke, getting us all the way out here. Who do you suppose called me?
Why don't you ask Cardigan?
What do you mean?
It's pretty obvious, isn't it?
I'm sorry, Jules.
He had that girl phone you, so he'd be alone with my wife.
Don't be ridiculous.
Why is it ridiculous?
Well, for one thing, if Cardigan really wanted to be alone with Grace, he could do it a lot smoother than that. He'd send you away on a field trip, for instance.
It's moving now, Reimer, of its own momentum. Yes. All you had to do was give your plan the first push and let Jules Emery take it from there. And when you and Jules arrive back at your apartment, you find both Grace and Cliff Cardigan gone. And later still, when the telephone rings, it's a very nervous Jules who snaps up the receiver.
Yes?
Oh, Jules, darling.
Grace, where are you?
I'm calling from a drugstore, dear. The car broke down. It's a fan belt or something.
Well, why did you take the car out?
Well, Cliff couldn't get a taxi, so I took him home. Jules, is something wrong?
The gentle way, Bruce. The easy, guiltless way. Yes. You couldn't have found a better weapon than Jules, could you? The following night, he arrives home unexpectedly.
Is that you, Jules?
Of course. Why? Whom did you expect, Grace?
Why, nobody. Only I thought you had an appointment with Bruce Reimer at the Institute this evening.
I did. I waited an hour for him, then he called and said he couldn't make it. By the way, who's your appointment with?
Mine.
Or are you going to tell me you've dressed up just to sit around the house and wait for me?
I dressed up because I thought I'd go to a movie. Jules, what's the matter with you? Is something wrong?
You can answer that question better than I can.
I don't know what you mean, darling. Is there any reason why I shouldn't go to a movie? I do it all the time when you work late. You know that.
All right, skip it.
But, Jules...
I said skip it. Where's my pipe?
Isn't it there on the table?
If it were, I wouldn't be asking.
I'm sure it's there. Let me look.
Never mind, never. I found it. Here behind this vase of roses. You know, it seems to me, Grace, that with all the penny pitching we have to do, you could forego buying flowers.
Oh, Jules, dear, you're in an awfully bad mood tonight. It happens I didn't buy those roses. They were sent here.
Oh, yeah? Who sent them?
It's very funny. The boy delivered the box around 6 o'clock. I didn't even know what it was. Then I opened it. There were a dozen roses, no card, no name. I haven't the slightest notion.
Oh, don't give me that.
Jules Emery, would you tell me what on earth is wrong
with
you?
I'm not an idiot. I know who sent those roses to you. Cliff Cardigan.
Cliff? Why would he...
He did send them, didn't he?
I told you I don't know. But what if he did? I told you Cliff and I are old friends.
You can make a better choice of friends, it seems to me.
And what does that mean?
Next time you work on our budget. Next time you wonder how we're going to get along on my salary. Please remember that Cliff Cardigan is the only reason I'm not administrator of Barker Institute.
Jules, how long have you been brooding on this?
Never mind that. You had a date to meet him tonight, didn't you? That's why you're all dressed up. That's why he sent you flowers.
Oh, Jules, listen to me, darling.
Oh, don't lie to me. Don't lie to me. I'll answer it. Hello.
Oh, hello, Jules. This is Cardigan.
Yes?
Say, I forgot to mention it before, old boy, but I'm sending you out of town. On a little field trip.
There's not much left for you to do now, is there, Bruce? As you see Jules off on the train to Fairfield the next morning, you can see that your weapon is poised, ready to strike at the innocent Cardigan. That a few days, perhaps a week alone, brooding in a drab country hotel will finish the job. There's no one to let Jules know what's happening except you. And you know how to handle that.
Telegram, sir, from Fairfield.
Oh, thank you.
Any answer?
No. No answer. Yes?
Fairfield calling. A person-to-person call for Mr. Bruce Reimer.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Reimer isn't at home.
And just to make sure, Bruce, one last item. The finishing touch.
Transworld Press Association.
Oh, good evening. This is Dr. Harvey Williams of Barker Institute. I thought perhaps you might be interested in an important discovery we've made.
Why, of course, Doctor. Thank you very much.
Well, it concerns a very deadly type of toxin called botulinus.
Yes, just a second. Who is it?
It's Jules. Jules Emery.
Jules, what in the name
of... I've got to talk to you, Bruce.
Well, it's 2 a.m. What are you doing in town?
I just got in. Where's Grace?
Grace?
Yes, where is she? What's been going on? Why didn't you answer my wire?
Well, I told you once, Jules. I don't want to become involved in your personal affairs. The questions you asked were none of my business. If you aren't man enough to settle your own problems...
Never mind the lecture. Where is she?
Grace? Well, I understand she's gone to visit her mother.
You're lying. You're lying to protect her.
All I know is what Grace told me.
What about Cardigan? Where's he?
At home, I suppose.
I've been there. He isn't home.
Oh, I remember now. He went on a weekend trip.
Where?
I don't know. But I believe he said he'd be back around 5 or 6 this morning. If you're so eager to find out where he's been, why don't you wait for him?
I intend to. You see this?
What?
Take a look at the newspaper here.
Cardigan taking credit
yes.
for...
Yes. All my work on botulinus. He says it's his discovery.
How could the paper make a mistake?
There's
like
no
that?
Mistake. It's a press association dispatch.
But how else?
Released by someone called Harvey Williams. There's no such person here. Cardigan went through my notes, Reimer. He released the story himself.
Oh, now, wait a
minute. I've done all the waiting I intend to do.
Well, that's a terrible accusation.
He's stolen everything from me. My job, my wife, and now this.
I can't believe...
Reimer, I'm going to kill him.
Well, Dr. Fenshaw, I didn't expect to find you here in Cardigan's office. Where's Cardigan, by the way?
Sit down, Reimer.
Huh? What's the matter?
I've been waiting for you. Something terrible has happened.
What do you mean?
Cardigan is dead.
What?
He was killed last night. Some passerby found him in front of his apartment. Cranial injuries, a blow on the head or something.
Good heavens, I just can't believe...
I know. It's left me a little shaken, too. Got a cigarette?
No. I'm sorry. I left them on my desk in my office. But Cardigan keeps some good cigars here somewhere.
No.
Oh, here they are.
No, thanks. His brand was always too strong for me. I'll pick up some cigarettes on the way downtown. Due at a meeting. Business as usual, you know.
Cardigan. Poor devil.
You may as well stay here in Cardigan's office, Reimer. Have to take over his work for the time being.
Oh, yes, of course.
Might be a week or 10 days before I can get the board together. And I'll have you officially appointed administrator.
I'll be happy to do what I can.
I appreciate that, Reimer. I'll try to look in again sometime this afternoon.
Well, Cardigan, old boy. Mind if I smoke one of your cigars? Bruce Rock. This is the administrator's office.
Is this Mr. Cardigan's office?
Yes. Bruce Reimer speaking.
Well, Mr. Reimer, you're the man I'm trying to locate. This is police headquarters. Lieutenant Owens speaking.
Yes?
We're holding a man here who's confessed to the murder of Mr. Cardigan. He says you know him. His name is Jules Emery.
Yes, Bruce. It was the gentle way that did the trick. And everything you wanted is yours now, with no strings attached, no embarrassing questions, no way the law can touch you. Jules Emery is a confessed killer now. Cardigan is dead. And Dr. Fenshaw himself has promised you your appointment as administrator. And it was so easy, wasn't it? A word here, a hint there, a box of roses, a few unanswered telegrams. And here you are sitting at Cardigan's desk, smoking one of his cigars, ready to tell Lieutenant Owens how you tried to reason with Jules Emery, tried to convince him he should forget his raging jealousy and go back to Fairfield.
Go on, Lieutenant.
Well, about this guy, Jules Emery. We don't know what's wrong with him, but we're calling a doctor for a checkup.
A doctor?
Yes. He certainly tells a weird story. We're holding him on a charge of intent to murder.
Intent? But you... You just said he confessed.
He did. He was sure he'd murdered Cardigan. Didn't seem to know Cardigan was run down in front of his house by a hit-and-run driver.
Well, I'm afraid I don't understand. How do you know it was a driver?
Because we got the driver and he confessed. The reason I called you, Mr. Ryder, you're in Cardigan's office now, aren't you?
Yes.
Emery just told us he invented some kind of deadly poison.
Botulinus.
That's it. He says one drop would kill a regiment. I just wanted to warn you.
Warn me?
Yes. Don't smoke any of Cardigan's cigars. They're full of that poison.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, which will come to you every Wednesday hereafter, beginning July 2nd, 1 week from this coming Wednesday.
The Whistler, on Tuned to Yesterday from June 27th, 1947, on the CBS Pacific Network. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.